All right, we do, or at least did, have a quorum, so I'm going to call this meeting of the Civil Law and Elections Committee to order. The committee legislative assistant will note the roll, and I'm going to add to the agenda the minutes from both February 14th and February 21st, 2005. Excuse me. Representative Emmer moves the minutes for February 14th, 2005. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. And Representative Lesh moves the minutes for February 21st, 2005. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted. On a vote of 3-1. All right, our first bill on the agenda is House File 507, Representative Westerberg, Fair Campaign Practices Omnibus. Representative Westerberg.
Mr. Chair, I have a minor one-word oral amendment to get the bill in the shape that I would like.
All right.
And that is on line 19 to change the word or to and.
All right. So it would read refreshments of food and non-alcoholic beverages. Any discussion on that oral amendment? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Now, was there another amendment here for your bill, Representative Westerberg?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about the bill?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill is arising from my own personal experiences here in Parades. And what's happened is basically, you know, one of the things that we want to do as candidates and re-elected officials at Parades is to toss candy out at parades to the kids and to distribute that, and that's something that we can't do. I do know that there are a number of people who do that anyways, and many times my campaign has decided to try, you know, to do that too, but at some point in the parade we just can't get started, and we never do, simply because I don't think it's, you know, it's good for us to put ourselves above the law. I think it's important that we abide within the framework of the law. So that's why I'm here today, is to try to change and correct that situation, because this is a practice that is going on now in a lot of campaigns. And this bill simply seeks to address that, to allow candy to be distributed at parades. The other thing that we did with the amendment, changing it from or to and, if you look at many of our town hall meetings or gatherings, we provide coffee and cookies. And according to the law, it actually was okay to provide either coffee or cookies, not both. And this minor amendment here is just going to clarify that and make this a better situation for everybody. And with that, I'll stand for questions.
All right. Any questions? And I don't think we actually moved your bill yet, Representative Westerberg, so that... And what the plan is to have an omnibus elections bill of those items that at least appear to be non-controversial. We'll have plenty of elections bills that wouldn't fit under that category, but my guess is this might. So what I think I will do is I will move House File 507 for possible inclusion in the omnibus elections bill. We'll still vote on it, but we will decide later whether it's going to go in that bill. So seeing no further discussion... Yeah, Representative Westerberg.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question as far as procedure goes, and does that preclude this bill from going by itself, too?
It would.
Okay.
Would you prefer that it go by itself?
No, I guess that discussion really didn't occur. I was just trying to think of what the differences might be. But I'll go with the wisdom of the Chair at this time.
All right. So I will move that House File 507 be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus elections bill. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
All right. The next bill on the agenda is House File 424, Representative Lesh's bill. Thank you for fixing that. It's been 3 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
I do my part.
Representative Lesh, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair. Members, I'd ask that this House File 424 be moved to pass the general register, I believe.
Yes. I think Commerce has asked for it.
Oh, Commerce.
Representative Lesh.
And that would be, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Lesh moves that House File 424 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Commerce Committee. And is this your amendment, Representative Lesch?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Sure.
Just a note, we actually received two or three amendments that didn't meet the 22-hour deadline, and we'd like to do that whenever possible, but I think my practice will be that as long as it's a, especially if it's an author's amendment, doesn't appear terribly controversial, we will take them unless there's an objection from someone on the committee. So seeing no objection, Representative Lesch will move the AO5-0088 amendment to put the bill into the form that he would like. All those in any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And by way of explanation on Amendment 2, I apologize. I was under the impression the entire time that this this bill was up tomorrow, and then I realized it was up today, so it was my fault. First, I would state that to members and folks here, I first became interested in the legislature when I was interning for a certain representative here in the House. And in that, with that representative, I had the opportunity to work on different parts of nuisance law legislation, which really interested me about ways to fix up our neighborhoods and make sure people are taking care of the housing stock, which really was the source of reinvestment in neighborhoods in St. Paul. And that representative was Andy Dawkins. So anytime he brings something to me or talks with me about some of the stuff, I always listen to him real intently, which is where the source of this legislation was today. I will allow Mr. Horner and former Representative Dawkins to explain this for the most part, but as you can see, the bill is for the most part straightforward, seeks to change language in the statutes as it stands to apply regardless of whether a building is actually occupied or not. And as many folks know, we have a number of unoccupied buildings in the city of St. Paul that can otherwise sidestep the requirements of the statute. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd ask that former Representative Dawkins speak on the bill.
Thank you. Representative Dawkins, welcome to the Civil Law and Elections Committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. First, I'd like to say to you and the other members here that I've appreciated the legislation that's passed in the last couple of years that's been authored by Representative Steve Smith and Representative Dan Dorman. It's helped a lot in the job I have now. Since I left the legislature, I've become Mayor Kelly's head of a department called Neighborhood Housing and Property Improvement. One of the wonderful things about this job is that many of the laws that I worked on as a legislator, I'm now in charge of enforcing, and so I'm able to see where the gaps are in what we wrote that aren't working out quite perfectly, and I appreciate Representative Smith taking one of them up 2 years ago and Representative Dorman last year and now Representative Lesch this year. This bill started really back when I tried to rewrite the Tenant Remedies Act in 1989 as a first term, or actually I got elected in the middle in the special election, so my first full term as a legislator. And if you look at the bill on line 11, we say that, and this is what the law was even before I was elected, that a residential tenant can bring an action to get an unfit residence or property fixed up. And I added clause 2, lines 14 to 17, saying that a neighborhood organization with the permission of the tenant could also bring that action, because door knocking had found too many properties where the folks that were going to vote for me and I said, well, what are you going to do about that decrepit property across the street that's a landlord-tenant property? And I said, well, I'll try and do something about that. And so that's when that clause 2 got added. And at the same time, we added the third clause, lines 18 to 21, which said that the neighborhood organization could also go after an unoccupied residential building. And when I say go after, it means simply that there are housing code violations, that a property shouldn't be allowed to remain in a blighted condition that in turn reduces the value of the adjoining or nearby properties. So we added that as well, and at the same time, we added the fourth clause, which said that a state, county, or local department or authority, that would be me now as the city of St. Paul, charged with the enforcement of codes, could also have standing to bring this action. And what I thought was clear, but in retrospect it should have been a lot clearer, was that we also could go after the unoccupied buildings. And we started doing that. And now the city's brought a number of legal actions in the 2.5 years that I've been in charge there. We are eliminating a lot of blighted properties in the city, getting them fixed up. Landlords that had these properties that were sitting vacant now have them fixed up, and they can command a higher rent for that, and the whole neighborhood is improved thereby. We did a couple on vacant buildings because I thought it was clear enough from the law that we could, and then one landlord got a good lawyer who argued to the housing court referee in Ramsey County that, well, it's fine for them to have brought this tenant remedies action as a city against the lower unit, which is occupied, but the upper unit is off bounds, off limits, it's can't be considered as part of a tenant remedies action. I asked the city attorney's office to do an appeal on that because I said, I wrote the law. I mean, I think the legislative intent, we can go up in the appellate court. And they said, no, not clear enough then. So the city council and the mayor asked me to approach the legislature this year to clarify that. As for the bill was introduced, Mr. Horner, who's been a friend of mine in housing legislation for years representing the Multi-Housing Association, asked me to consider the amendment that you adopted today that really sort of draws this bright line, if I could. I think that it's clear that everyone would agree that a city or a government authority cannot require that a place be occupied. We can't force a landlord to rent out their property. But I also think that just as clearly on the other side of the line that we can tell a property owner who's got a blighted property in the midst of the neighborhood that they have to eradicate the blight. They have to get the place fixed up, and the government has the power and should have the power to do that. And Mr. Horner's amendment makes it clear that's exactly where the line is drawn. We can't require them to fix up the property to the point that it's occupiable, but we can require them to fix it up to the point that it's not a blight. And that's what the amendment you adopted did.
All right. Any questions for Representative Dawkins? Mr. Horner, did you care to testify?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I think Representative Dawkins covered it. Thank you.
All right. Any
we support it, I should say. But
all right. Thank you. Any other discussion? Representative Lesh?
I would just say, Mr. Chair and members, that based upon the discussion that former Representative Dawkins and Mr. Horner just had prior to this meeting, that it appears there is peace in the valley on the bill. So both sides have come together on this and forged, I think, what is a reasonable compromise, and I'd ask for member support.
Representative
Dean, did you have a question? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question about the degree to which properties are to be remedied. And I can think of perhaps some instances where you might have, let's say, a historic property that has been purchased and the owner is going to, let's say, remodel this property or fix it up and is trying to get the funds together and do the necessary things to do that. And one person's historic property may be another person's blight. And what kinds of protections might there be for property owners that are trying to secure financing, and number one, and then number two, how do you draw the distinctions between what is removing blight and what is significant improvement or expense for property owners?
Chairman, Representative, the current law, even without this bill before you today, makes it clear that my department, and it's true throughout the state, that any housing code enforcement department can say that you got broken windows, you got to fix them, regardless of whether it's occupied or not. You got flaking, peeling, chipping paint on the outside of the property, you got to get that taken care of. Whether it's an historic district or not makes no difference, except that if you're in a historic district, there's at least in St. Paul, and I'm not sure about other parts of the state, a requirement that as you do that repainting or that fixing the windows, that you have to do it to the historic preservation standards. So that's a sort of a duty that's imposed over and above what this bill is talking about. This bill, in fact, as embodied in the Tenant Remedies Act, it's very clear that a court cannot order anything beyond the minimum housing code standards. So it's not to fix anything up to a luxuriant standard, or and the owner of the property sure can if they want, but there's no requirement by law, by code, by court order to do anything except the minimal housing code requirement that they have to do that.
Any other questions or discussion on the bill? Representative Ellison.
Mr. Chair, well, I guess this is proof that you got to be the committee on time or you miss things, but looking at the amendment, which is now part of the bill, I guess I'd like to just get your opinions on what about those dwellings? What about those dwellings that are unoccupied, but that you know have hazards in them that are dangerous? That you know homeless people or kids or somebody could get in there and it's sort of a real nuisance, like wiring things, stuff like that. I like the bill in the condition that it was in. Because I thought that it would protect people who were probably vulnerable and who may well go into buildings for shelter, old buildings for shelter or something like that. But with the amendment, it looks like maybe now the city cannot enforce a dangerous code violation if the apartment is unoccupied when it may really present a health hazard to somebody who may happen in there. I mean, I guess you could take the attitude of they shouldn't be in there, so what? Whatever happens to them, but I kind of take the attitude that we have to try to protect the public.
Representative Dawkins.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison. The current law set aside this bill allows the city to get an administrative search warrant to go inside on any structure where we believe there's a hazard. And I'm seeing a hazard, I have an inspector write that up, there'll be a repair deadline and so on. It's just that we wouldn't do it inside a tenant remedies action. This bill before you today simply says that the additional tool in the toolbox for me and any other city in the state, in fact, Rochester now is looking at replicating some of what we're doing in the city with regard to tenant remedies actions. Minneapolis does some of this already as well. That when you've got a property owner who stands aside and ignores the orders, once we've been inside, it's a danger, you've got to do it. If it's a true hazard and danger, we can abate it. We can go do the job and assess it for the property taxes if it's a true nuisance, but or hazardous nuisance. In this case, we would want to bring the tenant remedies action lawsuit. And if the owner doesn't comply with the court's timelines for taking care of the issues that were called, then a receiver or an administrator can be appointed in the stead of the owner to contract out to get the work done. So it's a small tool in the toolbox that I think is great for very unique cases and wouldn't impact at all on the issue you're talking about, whether it's a number of times.
Thanks. Any other discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Lesh renews his motion that House File 424 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Commerce Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Member.
Thanks, Jack.
You're good.
Thanks, Jack.
All right, members, next on the agenda we have House File...
Next on the agenda is House File 936, which is Chairman Johnson's bill. Chairman Johnson, it looks like you have a DE1 amendment. I assume that's yours?
Yes.
And furthermore, that you'd like to move that to get the bill in the shape in which you'd like to discuss it?
Yes.
Okay. Before we get to that, Representative Johnson, would you care to move your bill, please?
Yes. I would like to move House File 936 for possible inclusion in the elections omnibus bill.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman Johnson, to your amendment.
I will also move the DE1 amendment.
Okay. Members, we have before us the DE1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Chairman Johnson, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For most of Minnesota history, journalists have been allowed relatively easy and routine access to polling places in Minnesota as long as they didn't somehow interfere with the process. It has always in Minnesota been commonplace to observe reporters or other representatives of the news media taking photos or just observing what's happening in the polling places. In 2002, however, the Olmsted County attorney asked for an attorney general's opinion, and I'm not even sure why, whether there was an event that triggered this, but asked for an attorney general's opinion as to whether under the law journalists had a right to be in a polling place, and the opinion came back not necessarily. Essentially what the law said before last year was that we had a list of people that had a right to be in a polling place and journalists were not included in that. So in response to that, last year we amended the statute and passed a bill that included journalists in this list of people that have a right to be in a polling place with restrictions. And not surprisingly, we didn't make it crystal clear, and we found that several elections judges as well as several members of the media said that there were problems. It was confusing. A lot of local elections officials didn't really know what they had to do with respect to journalists. So we are here to try to clarify what the law says today. Over the past few months, the Minnesota Newspaper Association has met with the League of Minnesota Cities and local elections officials, and this bill, as amended, reflects the consensus agreement that's been reached. And I have not heard yet from anyone who isn't in support of the bill, although maybe we will today. The bill essentially says, as amended, that there is a presumption that the news media has reasonable access to polling places in Minnesota. A news media representative may enter a polling place for up to 60 minutes to observe what's happening. That time limit can be extended by the head elections judge within that head elections judge's sole discretion. the news media representative must present photo identification to the head elections judge and either recognize media credentials or written acknowledgement from a local election official of those credentials. A news media representative cannot approach within 6 feet of a voter, cannot converse with a voter in the polling place, cannot make a list of persons voting or not voting, and cannot interfere with the voting process. Obviously, I don't have to tell anyone here how important the voting process is to our democracy in Minnesota, and we ought to be constantly striving to ensure public confidence in that process. I believe this takes a step in that direction. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. Discussion, members. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the other Mr. Chairman. Explain to me why in our amendment on line 17, I can see why we added a voter. Why would we want to eliminate an election judge?
Chairman Johnson.
Thank you. I would ask that if there is someone in the audience who was part of the conversation regarding this compromise, is there anyone? Mr. Anthonson? It looks like you've been elected. I would defer to Mr. Anthonson, who was part of the discussions in coming up with.
Good afternoon, Mr. Anthonson. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark Anthonson, attorney for the Minnesota Newspaper Association. I was indeed part of the discussions about this bill. To answer the question, the reason the election judge has been removed is because it's a very simple, pragmatic problem that if a journalist comes in the polling place to present their credentials, they really do have to approach the election judge. And that's all we're trying to avoid.
Thank you, Mr. Anthonson.
I knew that. I just didn't. I wanted someone else.
Mr. Anthonson, I see you brought a colleague. Is this person, did you have remarks relevant to this point?
My name is Tom Ferber. I'm representing the League of Minnesota Cities Elections Task Force, and we were in discussions with Mr. Anthonson, and we're in agreement with his answer and support this.
Great. Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, and to the testifiers, I understand the pragmatic approach. How do we deal with a media person interviewing or asking questions of one of the election judges during the process, which, you know, they can't interfere according to this bill, but is that strong enough to stop that type of an action?
Mr. Anthony.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, well, I know that's basically a hypothetical question since journalists are pretty typically very deferential and respectful of officials in these contexts, but speaking theoretically, if you look at the very last substantive provision of the bill, which line 21 and 22, journalists are prohibited from interfering with the voting process. That is a judgment that the bill basically leaves to the judgment of the election official. And I think the example you give would clearly be interfering with the election process, the voting process, and the election judge would have the authority to stop it.
Any further discussion? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question regarding on the bill regarding the photo identification. It says present photo identification to the head election judge upon arrival at the polling place. We've had a lot of discussions about access to polling places, and in the last elections we had some difficulties with specific groups trying to gain access to polling places that were very aggressive and disruptive to the process in my area and in a lot of other areas. We're trying to remedy that with distances from the polling locations. What would stop a member of a group, let's say motionup.org, from saying, I am now a member of the media because I'm a blogger too, and here's my photo ID, and I could bring a video camera, right into the polling place and get the access that has been denied me from the other stat. And we faced this right on the House floor with bloggers now claiming to be journalists. So that's a little apprehension I have.
Mr. Anfinson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, that I think probably was the most difficult part of our discussions, because all of us who did these negotiations recognize the mischief that can occur. And as the media diversifies, even today what we consider the media may not be what it is in 5 or 10 years. So this is a treacherous issue. What we did, the compromise we worked out, which is imperfect but I think pretty close to effective, would be this. The photo identification requirement is not so much intended to be photo identification that I'm a journalist, but simply I'm who I say I am. Separately, then, the media rep has to have either a written media credential, which is something like a press card, or most journalists for, I hesitate to use this term, but reputable or mainline media organizations do have an ID card issued by their organization. So that's what you'd separately present. Or the theory is, with this language, that you would have previously contacted the election officials and they would have, in effect, recognized you and acknowledged that you're a media representative. There's some gray area here, there's no doubt about it, but I think this is going to come pretty close. We in the media certainly don't like the circumstances that you experienced and you described. We have our own concerns about that as well. So,
thank you. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to follow up on Representative Dean's question, when I look at the way the new amendment is drafted, it says written acknowledgement from that local official, election official, and you mentioned that as well. But my question is, in doing that, are we essentially allowing access to differing polling places that could possibly be skewed by an election official's political affiliation?
Mr. Anfinson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad, I think that's a possibility. One of the things that caused us to be back here this year was the wide variation on Election Day last November in how local officials interpreted this law. I don't think it was motivated by political affiliation. I think it was just confusion about the law. But that is an issue we didn't specifically talk about much. The folks from the League of Cities and local officials didn't seem too concerned about that. There is an alternative to that written acknowledgement, however, and that I think would pretty much offset your concern, which is I may arrive at the polling place and present a press card that says I am with the Hutchinson Leader, for example, and that is an alternative to written acknowledgement. So,
Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I appreciate that in regards to, for example, the Hutchinson Leader, but if we go back to the blogger issue, I think that it might be a little bit more confusing in that case or a little bit more able to be skewed based on political affiliation in regards to those folks who may not have those traditional media credentials. So I guess Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, I guess I still have a little concern over that piece of the puzzle in regards to how it might or might not apply to bloggers or other journalists who may not have a true credential.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad, in the end, there were a series of very difficult issues. We all thought of many examples, contingencies, hypotheticals that somewhere, someday, someplace in the state could occur. The ultimate judgment we made here, which we're comfortable with, was to leave the final decisions to the local election judges to control the polling place. There may be cases where the political affiliation of the election official will skew this, but I would regard that, in my experience, as somewhat improbable, and it'd be very difficult to address in a way I think that we could articulate it in any event.
Representative Broad.
I'm fine, Mr.
Chair. Sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Ellison.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think this is a good bill because the heart of it is that our First Amendment can be vindicated and can operate as a watchdog for the democratic process. And I think to expand, get more eyes on the process and therefore more accountability, hopefully, is basically a good thing. The bottom line is that we don't want to keep the press out. We want to let them in. And of course, just like Mr. Epperson said, in 5 years we may have a completely different animal that we call media today. We can't account for every case. We may have to come back and look at some of these things in the future as they expand. But at least for now, I think this is a good bill, and I'm going to be supporting it because, you know, we make sure that the press can help us watchdog the process.
Any further discussion at this point, members? Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Ellison, for your comments. I, too, think this is a good bill and something we ought to be looking at. I do still have some concerns over some of the more issue-based groups that are out there and how just having one election official make that determination could either allow or disallow them access to those polling places. So I'll just register that as an additional concern as we move forward. Thank you.
Chairman Johnson,
If anyone, if either of you or anyone else that has concerns about this language and maybe thinking through a possible scenario that we haven't talked about, has suggestions before this gets into the final omnibus bill, I'd be happy to entertain it.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. Members, if there's no further discussion at this time, what we'll do is we'll hear from other members of the public who may be interested in this bill. Is there anybody who wishes to testify in favor of House File 936 as amended? Is there anyone who wishes to speak in opposition to House File 936 as amended? Okay, seeing none, is there any further discussion amongst the committee? Seeing none, Chairman Johnson, any final comments with respect to your bill?
No.
Okay. With that, the chair will lay over House File 936 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus elections bill. Okay, members, we have a little bit of a procedural issue here. Per Chairman Johnson's request, what we will do is we will vote on the bill at this time, even though we will be laying it over for potential inclusion. So what we will do is vote. So all those in favor of House File 936 as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, say no. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right, the next bill on the agenda and last bill on the agenda is House File 944, Representative Emmer's bill. Representative Emmer moves that House File 944 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. Does that sound right?
That's correct.
All right. And did you have an amendment as well?
It'd be A05.
Okay. The A050092 amendment. This one also did not meet the deadline. Are there any objections to hearing this? All right. Representative Emmer moves the A050092 amendment to put it in the form that he would like. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill, House File 944, has to do with the open meeting law. The open meeting law currently allows for certain government entities to hold meetings by interactive TV if certain requirements are met. This bill, 944, will allow several other government entities to hold meetings via interactive TV or other electronic means, and specifically it will apply to the Agricultural and Economic Development Board, the Small Business Development Center Advisory Board, the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Board, the Governor's Workforce Development Council, the Urban Initiative Board, and Explore Minnesota Tourism Council. The idea of the bill, as it's been explained to me, and Lee Nelson from DEED is here to testify in support of the bill, and it's his organization that's brought it forward, is to make these boards more accessible to people in outstate Minnesota. One of the issues in serving on government entities such as these is having to make commitments to travel and for lodging. This will allow people from all parts of the state to participate if they so desire. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I have Lee Nelson.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Nelson. If you would introduce yourself for the record, and please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I'm the Director of Unemployment Insurance Legal Affairs, and I was asked by Commissioner Matt Kramer to get involved in this open meeting law. Currently, the Department of Employment and Economic Development has 10 boards under its auspices, and 4 of those boards currently have this authority, and we are simply asking that this be expanded to the remaining 6 boards. The language used in the bill is almost word for word from that in the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency law at section 462A.041, which was enacted in 1997. It also was word for word for legislation enacted in 2003 involving the Rehabilitation Council for the Blind and the State Rehabilitation Advisory Council. Nothing in this bill is unique. Even the words other electronic means is currently in the statute, as I indicated, in 3 places. So nothing in this bill is new, unique. It does nothing more than is already authorized by law for a number of boards. And we are simply asking that it be expanded across the remaining 6 boards under the department's authority.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I might add, the amendment, or as amended, this proposed amendment, I don't think we've moved on it yet.
I'm sorry.
Have we moved on the A05 amendment?
We moved the A05.
I just want to explain to folks, the purpose of this amendment is to make interactive TV the primary choice. The thought is, Mr. Nelson has already testified, this is nothing new, but the Department of Administration wanted a preference in the bill that whenever possible, interactive TV be utilized. If it's not available, it would allow for telephonic or other electronic participation.
All right. Any questions for Mr. Nelson or the author? Representative Slawick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Ember, you know, I haven't thoroughly read the bill. I've just kind of seen it on first blush. I mean, you know, occasionally legislators, for some reason or another, can't get to session because of illness or things like that. Would you be open to an amendment allowing legislators to vote through interactive TV?
Mr. Chair and Representative Slawick, no.
Representative Slawick?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, I might think about that anyway, just to put that on there. I just think that, it's kind of a rare occasion, but there are times, snowstorms, whatever, you know, maybe the legislators can't get here for a vote during session. It would be a rare thing, but for them to be able to participate potentially from a different location might be an advantage, so I will talk with you about it further.
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Slawick, I might point out the Senate heard this same bill, Senate version, about an hour ago, and an amendment was put on there, advanced by the Association of Counties, whereby counties and other local units of government could, in an emergency, only when a local emergency is declared, conduct a meeting by conference telephone. That was not brought to Representative Emmer because the individual on behalf of the counties had not had an opportunity to speak with him yet. I haven't had an opportunity to tell him about that amendment in the Senate. We don't know what that would mean in the House, and we haven't had a chance to really look at that amendment. And the Department of Administration has looked at it, but hasn't had an opportunity to closely review that amendment. But that was done in the House so that it expands it to counties in cases of emergency. Counties and other local units of government.
Mm-hmm. Representative Flower? Representative Lett?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, Representative Slavik bringing up that point might make me less likely to support this bill on some kind of slippery slope theory, that if we're going here for these units of government, would the legislature end up going that direction? I remember as a kid going out to Washington, I don't know how old I was, and going to see the action on the floor and seeing one guy standing up there talking. And I suspect if this bill was enacted in law, there's a long period of time yesterday on the floor that floor would have been mostly empty by many members' wishes. So that I would just state that for the record, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that comment, Representative Flatt. Representative Slawick.
Mr. Chair, I mean, actually, Mr. Nelson bringing up, Representative Demmer bringing up that idea is interesting because you think of terrorism, things like that, where maybe we couldn't meet as a legislature. I mean, it is food for thought. And if we were all out in our districts, if there was some kind of emergency where we all couldn't get here, particularly in changing times, we might want to think about something like that. So, but I never thought about it would be kind of interesting to be anywhere and be able to vote. But just food for thought.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Emmerich.
Just that. I appreciate all the discussion, but just focusing on this bill, I think we should keep in mind we're talking about some very specific economic-related boards, and the idea is to pull people in from around the state so they'll participate in these specific boards, which are basically setting some policy recommendations for the governing body, which is here. So just on this bill, I think it's appropriate, and I'd ask... I'd ask to have it moved. By the way, I'm told by Mr. Nelson that his understanding is it was supposed to be sent to the Commerce Committee.
Okay. We will change your motion.
Thank you.
Commerce Committee. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify either in favor of or against this bill? Mr. Anthonson. And if there is anyone else, please come forward now. Mr. Anthonson, if you could again introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Again, Mark Anthonson, attorney for the Minnesota Newspaper Association. We have looked at this bill carefully and talked to the author. We do think that given the special nature of these boards and commissions, and especially the burden that membership can impose on folks who live in greater Minnesota, we have familiarity with that same problem within our own association. To get people to serve from northwestern Minnesota is an ongoing challenge, for example. There is one amendment I just want to call to the author's attention, which he probably will not hear me say, but in talking to him, scattered throughout this bill in about 15 different places is a reference to meetings by telephone or other electronic means. We did express concern about the other electronic means reference. It's not defined. Nobody knows what that would refer to. We do think there's some opportunity for mischief if that's left in the bill. In other words, it would be widely interpreted, for example, to authorize an email meeting potentially. That's a different thing. And in talking to the chief author, he did, I believe, suggest that it might be acceptable to delete that language.
Mr. Chairman, in response, these are excellent points, and they were raised to me yesterday. However, since yesterday, when I said that that sounded reasonable to me, I have learned that this same language is taken right from Minnesota Statutes 248.10, 268A.02, and 462A.041. The important thing to note here, as has been explained to me, because I was concerned about email. First off, the amendment that's proposed by the Department of Administration makes it clear that interactive TV would be the first choice. The second choice would be some type of telephone or verbal participation. The reason the language of the bill says, or other electronic means, is because you don't just use your phone nowadays. You can actually send your voice through cable, through computers. So it's phrased in such a way as not to limit the option. But the idea would be participation verbally as opposed to by email. But that being said, the points raised are good points. The problem is this language is identical to language that already exists on these other in these other laws.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just, I appreciate that. And what we'll do is work with the author to try and refine this. I don't want to make this into a, I do think other elements of the bill, for example, the reference to the requirement that all participating members can hear each other would make it more difficult to use email and things like that. Some of the statutes that are cited do indeed contain similar language, but I think some of those were adopted or enacted before before email became common. However, I'm confident we can work these refinements out without difficulty. Thank you.
Representative Nelson, do you have a question? Any other discussion on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Emmer will change his motion to recommend that House File 944 as amended be passed and re-referred to the Commerce Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Seeing no further business, we are adjourned.